reason work that we put on the paper. It's called the nonlinear bosonization, non-fermi liquid, and the anomalous Hall effect. And I also want to cover some work in progress. So although I'm going to tell you about this Fermi liquid and non-Fermi liquid story, I'm also working on several different topics. For example, like quantum Hall effect, rotating bosine sign condensate, higher-end gauge theory, quantum information and quantum computation, and there are a lot more. So I'm looking forward to the further discussion. So firstly, I would like to tell you what this talk is about and why this topic is so excited. So people know that the main focus of this talk will be focusing on the Fermi liquid theory, although I will also talk about some extension beyond the Fermi liquid theory. So people know that the cornerstone of the Fermi liquid theory is Landau's Fermi liquid theory. But we know that the Landau's Fermi liquid theory is not a field theory. So this gives us another motivation, like we want to construct an effective, nonlinear effective field theory action in terms of bosonic degree of freedom. And this is the motivation. And how can we do so? So the method that we use is something called the co-joint orbit method. It's some mathematical description I will telling you guys later on in the talk. People might wonder, what is the what can we use on this method to do something? So I would like to bring you guys to the attention of this computation of the linear and nonlinear responses. It turns out that from our computation that we only need the tree-level diagram to compute, for example, the density three-point correlation functions. But for example, like in the fermionic side, you can see here that people you need to use the one-loop diagram with some insertions to compute this density three-point function, for example. And it turns out the computation is quite tedious, like for example, like 70 pages. But in our side, that we figure out that we only need this tree-level diagrams to compute this density three-point functions, for example. And our paper is not like 70 pages long, and this is just part of the computation. So this gives us some benefit of doing so. Okay, so the plan of my talk is that firstly, I will go briefly review what Landau's Fermi liquid is and treat it as some dynamics of the droplet. And I also bring your attention to the method that we use is something called the co-joint orbit method. And I would write down the effective field theory action of our construction. And later on, I will also bring you to the attention of the ongoing progress about how if we turn on some gauge fields and bring us to the possible connections to the anomalous Hall effect. So let's start it by introduce what's the Landau's Fermi liquid theory and talk about the dynamics of the droplet. Okay, so our story begins with this very gapless system. It will be the focus of this talk. So the gapless system we are thinking about is a gapless system with a Fermi surface. For example, we can think about Fermi and non-Fermi liquid theory. And for example, there are some conventional metals, a Hopfield Landau levels that will be in this discussion. So now the question is, how can one describe the state of the Fermi liquid theory? So to answer this question, a state of the Fermi liquid theory is described by a closed Fermi surface in momentum space with some arbitrary shape and volume. And here give you some example how this will be, can one think about this? Okay, so this will be turned out to be the building block throughout this entire talk. Okay, so what is Landau's Fermi liquid theory? Although I believe you guys are very familiar with this, but let's briefly review what this is. So Landau's Fermi liquid theory is described as a theory of free Landau quasi particle. And we also know that the structure of the theory is not a field theory, because it's described as a low-energy effective theory governed by the kinetic equation. Okay, another thing I want to draw to your attention is the computation of the linear and nonlinear responses. Because it turns out that later on, I will go walk you through that from the fermionic side and from our approach, that we can compute the linear and nonlinear responses, and we realize that all three different approaches will match to each other. Okay, so let's see that we can also compute these linear and nonlinear responses from the kinetic equation, but only to the leading order in momentum. So which means that we need an effective field theory action to calculate correlation function to all order in momentum.
So, which are three methods?
I'm sorry?
Which three methods?
Okay, so one is that the one I want to emphasize here from the kinetic theory of Landau's Fermi liquid theory, that we can also compute the linear and nonlinear responses. And another two is that if you see the previous slides, then we'll see that from the computation of the fermionic side, then we need a one-loop correlation, one-loop diagram to compute. And also, I will want to emphasize that from our side, we only need a tree-level diagram to compute that. And it turns out that all three different methods will match, the result will match to each other. So that's something I want to draw to your attention to this discussion. Okay, good. So what I want to say is that we need an effective field theory to compute the correlation function to all order in momentum. So this gives us another motivation why we want to do so. Yes?
This kinetic equation is linearized one or not linearized one?
Okay, so I will show you later on about this result. Thank you for asking. Yeah. So far, so good. So I will continue. So our discussion will be focusing on this phase-based distribution function of quasi-particle. And here give you some illustration how what our building block is. So our building block, it turns out to be this shape of the Fermi surface living in phase space. And so one can ask a question, how can one characterize the time evolution of this droplet in phase space? Okay, so there's one very crucial thing I want to draw to your attention, is that if the initial condition, which means that distribution function outside is zero, and inside of the Fermi surface is one, and this condition, it should be preserved under time evolution. Another thing that we can think about is that the total number of particles is conserved, so which means that we will have some volume preserving of phase space condition. So this turns out to be something very crucial in our formalism. Okay, so how can we characterize the time evolution of this droplet in phase space?
So in this talk, where you only talk about neutral excitations?
So I would, later on, I will also bring you to other directions as well. So let's see how the story goes. Yeah, thank you. So the time evolution is governed by this kinetic equation, which you can see here for the Liouville's equation of free fermion, if we want to keep our life simpler. Yeah. Okay, so I would want to show you how this works. So the building block of our story is some droplet in phase space. So if you want to make our life simpler, let's start from some spherical translation invariant and simple connected this configuration to begin with. And when we talk about this the dynamics of the droplet, it started to change its shape under time evolution, and it's governed by the kinetic equation that you see previously. Okay, so how can one, also to answer the question, how can one compute this linear and nonlinear responses from the kinetic theory? So if one expands the fluctuation in terms of some background field, so from the kinetic theory, we can compute the linear response. This does look something familiar with. And also we can also obtain the nonlinear responses in the regime here. And later on, I will also show you in two different approaches that this is also can be computed as well.
So what goes wrong exactly with the, what is the origin of this requirement that omega VFQ is much less than EF?
Yes, so this is the long wavelength limit that our construction should be in this region. Yes.
I mean, you said that the other approach will not have such a restriction, right?
No. I will show you also later on our construction in this talk. Although I believe, my personal belief is that we can go beyond that. But in this talk, we are using some long wavelength limit will be the focus. But I'm happy to discuss my current thought about this. Yeah, thank you for the question. Okay, so far as...
Very naive question.
Yes.
Since you are talking about phase space, are you doing semi-classical physics?
Exactly. So also follow up on the comment, this talk will be focusing on the semi-classical approximation, but our entire action is a quantum action, so which means that we can go beyond that, but it's beyond the scope of this talk. Yeah, thank you. So far, so good. I will continue. Okay, so there are some successes of this Landau's Fermi liquid theory. For example, in liquid helium 3, or electrons in metals, or even in the neutrons in neutron stars. Okay, so although this talk is going to be focusing on the Fermi liquid theory, but also one can think beyond the Fermi liquid theory. So there's some experimental observation of this. For example, in high TC superconductor, like the strange metal in Krupp ray. So in this kind of beyond the Fermi liquid theory, we can also discuss the Fermi surface, but the thermodynamics and the transport is not like the Fermi liquid theory. But this is from the experimental side. One can ask, what about in the theoretical side? So our focus will be focusing on discussing a Fermi surface and coupled to the critical boson or the gauge fields. Okay, so we have been revealing what Landau's Fermi liquid is. And we know that the Landau's Fermi liquid theory is not a field theory. So there's no connection to the effective field theory with some benefits from the Wilsonian tools. And because our motivation, like we also draw to your attention, that we want a field theory description of this Landau's Fermi liquid theory. And there, we find out there's another motivation when we go to discuss the non-Fermi liquid theory. It turns out that the field theory description might be helpful. So for example, there's fermions and finite density and coupled to the U1 gauge field. And the example of this will be Hafele Landau levels of electrons with short range interactions. So what's our goal? Our goal will be try to write down some local effective field theory for the Fermi surface in the bosonic degree of freedom. So before I...
You want to say that the Shankar theory is not local enough?
I will tell you later on. Thank you for asking. Yeah. So far, so good. Let me also answer Dominic's question. Bring you back to what previous work is about, like constructing an effective field theory for Fermi liquid theory. For example, back to 90s, people are thinking about like Shankar and Puchinsky. They are thinking about like Landau's Fermi liquid theory as an effective field theory of fermions. And in their approach, we need to think about the Fermi surface are divided into some patches. And the scaling properties of Landau parameter and BCS coupling as only marginal terms. So there's some drawback of these approaches. For example, if one wants to compute the non-natural cancellation, some diagrams in perturbation theory, we find out there's some unnatural cancellation between the diagrams that you compute. So this will give us another motivation why we want to study bosonization. So also, I want to talk about the previous work on this bosonization. For example, in 1 plus 1 dimension, the fermion is dual to the boson in 1 plus 1 dimension. And if one wants to study the higher dimension of this bosonization, there are also some great work on of the generalization to higher dimension bosonization. So in their approaches, the chiral boson, there's some chiral boson at each point of the Fermi surface. Okay, so now the question we want to ask is that, is there a general rules for formulating the actions? So this will be the goal of our approach. Okay, so far I've been reviewing what previously people have been thinking about. Firstly, like go through the Landau's Fermi liquid theory and also walk you through the previous attempt that people have been thinking about this topic. So now I want to draw to your attention to our formalism of how can we construct an effective field theory action of using some mathematical description called conjoint orbit method. Okay, so like our goal will be formulating Landau's Fermi liquid theory as some field theory description in terms of bosonic degree of freedom. And to construct this effective field theory action, we need to check that the equation of motion will go back to the Landau's kinetic theory. So how can we do so? The method that we use will be the conjoint orbit method.
Can I ask, that's the classical equation of motion, but once you have an action, you can also quantize it, right?
Exactly. So they will be beyond the scope of this talk, but I'm happy to discuss more about, for example, if one can go beyond the semi-classical approximation and go to some Moyard description. Also, you can think about it from the coherent state path integral. They can also construct the same approaches, but I'm happy to discuss more about this. Yeah, thank you for the question. Yes. Okay, I will continue. So before I tell you about this co-adjoint orbit method, I want to draw your attention about this geometric viewpoint of Fermi liquid theory. So let's start from consider at zero temperature. The Fermi surface is a droplet in phase space. Okay, so for example, one can think about this very simple kinetic translation spherical symmetry one. So the kinetic equation, if one wants to consider the time evolution of this droplet, and this time evolution will be governed by the kinetic equation that we discussed before. So for example, if one think about some single particle living in phase space, so its motion will be governed by some Hamiltonian evolution. But now our attention will be focusing on swarm of the particle. So this time evolution is a one parameter family of the canonical transformation of phase space. So the Fermi liquid theory, Fermi liquid, can be identified with the conjoint orbit of the group of canonical transformation.
So it sounds like he is saying the shape of the Fermi surface can be identified as the conjoint orbit. But suppose I also want to care about, say, the change of the Fermi velocity around the Fermi surface. Is it also captured by this?
So I haven't told you what conjoint orbit is. So later on, I will identify of the reference state and tell you what conjoint orbit is. That probably that's way later on of the whole the construction. Yeah,
thank you. Velocity is not a dynamical degree of Fermi theory.
Yeah, but it's part of the data of the Fermi liquid theory.
Oh, yeah.
To characterize it.
Okay, it will appear in theory, I guess, somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah, let's pause the discussion and wait later on to draw back about this. Okay, so I will continue. Okay, so like what I mentioned, that up to now, we haven't tell you what conjoint orbit is. So this will be something very crucial in our paper. So let's consider some reference state. To make our life simpler, we can start it from some simple kinetic translation invariant one to begin with. But one can also ask, okay, I'm not going to live my life so simple. I'm going to construct an arbitrary shape of the Fermi liquid of the droplet as my reference state. So my question, my answer to this is one can do so as well, and will live in the same conjoint orbit. So what is conjoint orbit? Okay, so let's choose a reference state to begin with. And let's consider all the possible canonical transformation. So all the allowed state with respect to the original reference state will form a conjoint orbit. Okay, so conjoint orbit is a space of the state of the sharp Fermi surface with some fixed total volume. And recall that we say that we will have the condition of the total number of particles to be preserved. So which means that the this phase space volume is preserved. So the evolution of the system will occur on the conjoint orbit. Okay, so a state of the Fermi surface will be the point on the conjoint orbit.
By volume of the Fermi surface, do you mean the volume in the momentum space or in the phase space?
In the phase space, yes. So we can think about it as some slice at each coordinate. There's some slice. So our configuration will be some cylinder of that. So that's something that we think about. And we also think about the particle number should be conserved, so which means that phase space volume should be preserved. Yes. Other question?
So the volume is the only number which characterizes each co-adjoint orbit? Or is each co-adjoint orbit completely specified by one number, that is the volume?
Exactly. So that's one condition, actually. The volume of phase space should be preserved because we have the condition that the particle number should be conserved. Yes, thank you.
The question was, if you know the volume, does that specify the co-adjoint orbit?
I think so, yes. Because it you need to choose, okay, so let me draw to your attention again. So we need to talk about conjoint orbit with respect to some reference state. So if you pick up the reference state, you characterize what the volume, phase-based volume is. Okay, so that's my answer to this question. Does it answer your question?
What's sharp? Sharp, what does sharp mean?
Okay, so we are in the zero temperature. So we need to have the sharp Fermi surface. Yes?
So does the orbits include, say, configurations where small droplets are detached from the main form surface, like not simply connected configuration?
Yes, that's a very good question, actually. So our topology will be same in our configuration. But now, if you want to ask a question, if you want to change the topology of this configuration, I believe one can do so, but we haven't do this calculation. It's a very interesting question.
You include only the simply connected.
Exactly. But I think if you change the topology, one can also do so for considering conjoint orbit method, but we haven't done yet. So yeah, thank you for bringing the interesting question.
I want to understand better what the volume in free space means. So in this particular example, what is the volume in free space?
So it will be, let's see. So it means that if you enclose some this Fermi surface living in phase space, so the volume of this phase space is.
So in this particular example, it's the product of this Fermi surface in momentum space and the volume of the system?
Yes, so you can see here the configuration, it shows you only the momentum, right? So like what I have been talking about, you can think about it as some slice at each coordinate. And there's some slice, it becomes some cylinder configuration. So it makes you have a better vision of what this will be like. Yes?
I think the point is that it could be spatially dependent, right? So the cylinder could be not like this.
Exactly. Yes.
I also want to make sure another detail. So previously you mentioned if I start with the initial state, where inside the Fermi surface is occupied and outside is empty, then the volume is preserved. If I start from some other initial state, is it still preserved in free space?
Okay, so for example, I would answer this question by thinking about if one wants to extend this. Up to now, we are thinking about zero temperature configuration. So for example, if one wants to start in from some finite temperature case, that thing we haven't studied yet.
I think my question is just a
yes.
Micro question.
From yes.
The Fourier equation, can I see that independent of the initial state, the volume is always preserved? Is this true?
What do you mean by volume? It's not a sharp Fermi surface.
Huh?
It's not a sharp Fermi surface. What do you mean by volume?
Particle number. I'm not sure if it's the particle number. So previously in the kinetic equation, there's this quantity F, EXT. In terms of this F, what does volume mean?
This will be joy.
Maybe yeah. Also explain the reason I ask this question. If I really consider interacting Fermi liquid,
mm-hmm.
consider the fermion number distribution of the real electrons, it's not really a sharp step function. There is a discontinuity, but it's not a step function. It's not saying that inside something is one and outside is zero. I think you can regularize the knowledge physics by saying there's a sharp Fermi surface in the sense that inside is one, outside is zero, but generically, just given the F, P, and X, what does volume mean?
Okay, so I think if you are interested in that, I can give you a detailed calculation of like what does the volume preserving of phase space will mean in our construction. But due to the time limit, I'm happy to discuss in private also later on. Yeah, so thank you for your question. Yes. Any other question? Okay, if not, I will continue and let's discuss more later on. Okay, so the building block of this talk will be some shape of the Fermi liquid theory. So our goal is try to construct an action to characterize this shape of the Fermi surface. So this will be the main result of our construction. Okay, so let's start in from some ground state. The ground state that we choose here will be some spherical translation invariant and simple connected one. But like I say, we can start in from some arbitrary shape to begin with. So the what will be the time evolution of this Fermi surface shape? So like we mentioned before, it will be governed by some kinetic equation. So this is nothing much but just a rewriting of the kinetic equation into some compact form. And where here is some phase space Poisson bracket. So now we want to ask a question. What about what will be the allowed state for this formalism? And it turns out not every state is allowed, but the allowed state will form an orbit with respect to the original reference state under some group. And it turns out that we find out that this is a group of canonical transformation. The reason is that we find out the this algebra is the Poisson bracket. Okay, so later on, we want to parameterize the degree of freedom of this construction, where the parameterization group element is with the element of the algebra of phase space. And we realize that there is some ambiguity from our description. For example, if you choose another parameterization, UV, and you have the V under some stabilizer group, and we find out that the this new parameterization will make the F0 invariant. So which means that the coadjoint orbit can be understood as some coset. So we know because of the ambiguity, there's some gauge freedom redundancy. So later on, we can choose some gauge fitting condition to eliminate the redundancy. So this is a gauge fitting condition that we choose here. But I might ask a question like, can we choose other gauge fitting condition? So I myself try so, and you would change the whole description of formalism. So up to now, I've been bringing you to the all the this construction abstractly. But we are physicists. We want to understand some physics. So here will be some physics starts to jump in. We can identify the degree of freedom as some scalar field, which lives in the Fermi surface here.
So just to make sure, the content of this gauge fixing is just to say that the phi doesn't depend on the magnitude of the
exactly. But you can also choose other gauge fixing condition as well. Yes.
And here you want to use phi as the degree of freedom to build the action instead of f.
Exactly. Exactly.
What is exactly the group of canonical transformations? Is this like symplectic of 2n or something?
So my answer to this is that if you think about some infinitesimal canonical transformation, the reason we are saying that is that we'll find that the algebra will be identified with some phase space Poisson algebra. So that's why we want to talk about this here. Yes. Okay, I will continue. So let me show you something that in our mind, that if you start in from some spherical and simple connected reference state to start with, so the Fermi surface from the canonical transformation can be thinking about is on changing of the shape of the droplet. Okay, so what will be the action look like This is a very key point of our construction. So the action wheel contains two parts. The first part is the Wessel-Minow-Witten part, and the second one is the Hamiltonian part. So the first turn, the Wessel-Minow-Witten turn here, can be also written as this KKS true form. So how can we think about this? So let's say we think about some point of the Clausian orbit, and we think about two tangent vector, and map to some value that's characterized by this KKS two form. And we also realize that this will be, one can demonstrate that this Wessel-Minow-Witten turn. So the Berry phase turn can be treated as some symplectic form of the space of the droplet. And also, how can one think about this? So let's say we think about some changing of shape of this droplet. And while changing its shape, it will pick up some adiabatic phase with respect to this Berry phase turn. And it turns out later on, you can also see that this turn is some universal turn. So let's recall that in the Fermi liquid theory, there is some universal turn. It's not be changed if you want to have some interaction. So this will be related to this Wessel-Minow-Witten turn.
So is the coefficient of this term supposed to be quantized?
That's a very good question. So actually, we have been thinking about the quantization of this Wessel-Minow-Witten turn. The first thing is that you can think about it as some Nottinger theory for coupling to the A0. So it turns out that the coefficient should be 1. Another is that you can think about it if you put in the system on the torus. So you have to think about some large gauge transformation. I think one can investigate this question. So thank you for the question. Okay.
Does the parenthesis mean you do the integration in X and P space?
Yes. So the trace over is trace over X and P. Exactly. So far, so good. So the second turn is the Hamiltonian for the free fermion. But we know we are in the construction of the effective field theory. So one can also write on other turns that is hidden here. So if you want to consider, let's turn on the interactions. So all the things like the Landau parameter and the Wilsonian coefficient will be hidden in this dodotal turn here. Okay, so up to now, I've been telling you how can we construct our formalism in terms of co-joint orbit method. And I also show you our action will contains two parts, the Wessel-Minow-Witten part and the Hamiltonian part. But I haven't told you how the effective field theory action will look like. So if you want to compute exactly of our construction to the Gaussian theory, and this is the result then we can get. So which means that this does look something very familiar with. So we can think about there's some chiral boson lives on the Fermi surface, and we realize that this will recover the multidimensional bosonization of what people have been thinking about previously. And also, you can compute the density operator and the two-point correlation function. So all this will be going back to what previously people have been thinking about. Yes?
I didn't follow. Is this action in this slide obtained from the one on the previous slide by some manipulation, or are you proposing that this action also describes one on the previous slide?
Okay, so maybe I can show you briefly of what this can be construct. So for example, that if you see from the action of the Wessel-Minow-Witten part, there's some, this is a traceover of S and P. Okay, so let's start in from some reference state. And you can have this parameterization. I'm sorry. So how can we construct this is that you have to thinking about this this is will be something that you can think it about later on. Let me keep this brief to answer your question. So this is will be how the construction will work in our formalism. Yeah, so if you work it out in the Gaussian limit, this is something that you can obtain. But I also only show you the Webster-Minowitan part. The Hamiltonian part can be also constructed accordingly. Yes, so in this formalism up to the Gaussian theory, that you realize there's no nearby boson will talk to each other.
So
in this case,
in 1D optimization, this phi is supposed to be compact.
Exactly. So you can think about it as some compactness if you put it on the torus. We have been investigating it as well. Yes.
But in your previous definition, phi is defined through that U is. Is it clear that phi is compact?
Yes, so we haven't put it here in the discussion, but I'm saying that you can think about the system, put it on the torus, and thinking about this large gauge transformation. This can be help you to think more about this direction. Yes, yes, good question.
There's a bigger picture idea is that this chiral boson is actually the generator of the canonical transformation.
So the generators that we're thinking about is some fermion bilinear.
Okay.
Yes.
So how does the U1 particle number conservation symmetry act on phi?
So in that case, I think you can think it about the generator, which is the integral over this density. Here, yes, good.
So is it just that phi becomes phi plus a constant?
So I think if you integrate over this density operator, and you will get the what? Yes.
So what does it mean? Phi to be chiral, like chiral in.
Okay, so that's good. I haven't shown you what the multidimensional result will be. So this is, I believe, this is in d equal to 2, which d means the special dimension 2. But if you write it term by term in the multidimensional case, I can show you the result, but I haven't got it here in the slides. Yes.
Yeah, but I just don't understand what that means for a two-dimensional thing to be chiral, right? In one dimension, I think left and right. In two dimension, what that means to be chiral.
Okay, so we can think about it as some patch theory. So in every angle, because here we don't have the nearby boson talk to each other. So we can think about it as some patch theory. Even every patch, you can think about like that. Yes.
Oh, I see.
I believe there was a question. Yes.
Yeah. So the logic is, say, if you don't know the Hamiltonian on the previous page, right? Like H, and but you say it's the same, like evolution with this H is the same as the evolution with U that is parameterized in terms of phi, and then you construct an action for phi, and say you find the phi, right? Then you just plug it in, and you would know the evolution of your F, right? Is that the idea?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So if we just look at 2D, do you mean e to the I phi is the fermionic operator?
We are not only focusing on 2D. This is just for showing in the slides that we only show 2D. But in our paper, we have arbitrary dimension.
Yeah, but let's focus on 2D.
Yes.
What is the fermionic annihilation operator?
Okay, so we can think about there's some... okay, so this is only one construction, but also... we can think about there's some generator, which is fermion bilinear. And if you're not satisfied with this construction, one can also think about it as some coherent state path integral. And in that case, we can think about the generator as some fermion bilinear and so on and so forth. Yes?
I'm asking about a single fermion operator.
That's a very good question. So in that case, that if you actually there's something I'm thinking about right now. Our method will be focusing on fermion bilinear, but let's say if we want to have the single fermion operator come into play, then the whole algebra, I believe, you need to have the extended version of the algebra to encode the single fermion operator. That's a very good question. Yes.
So that is e to the I phi, though. I mean, it has the. I mean, it's charged under the global U one, right? Assuming the phi transforms, as we were just saying. So then it must be some operator, but it doesn't seem like it's fermion. So what is e to the I phi represent?
So I think it will be characterized as some change in its shape. Yes.
It has charge one, right? I think that's the question.
Oh yeah, exactly, yeah.
What is it? Is it charge one operator? It looks like a boson. What is it?
Okay. So maybe I didn't hear quite well from here. Can you repeat what you were asking?
I was asking what John just said.
Haha. So okay. My answer to this question is that if you want to understand the quantization of this theory, we actually haven't investigated very carefully. So I will post this to be later on. Yeah, but we have been thinking about this. Yes.
So every operator here are bosonic, right?
Exactly.
And I missed this part. So how did you identify the density operator as this operator?
I'm sorry. So here, if you couple to the sum A0, then you can obtain this. Okay. Yes. Okay, so far so good. So let's continue to some the main part of our construction, that is the nonlinear correction of our formalism. So before we talk about this nonlinear action, we need to know where does the nonlinearities come from. So actually, it comes from two parts. First is the geometry of the Fermi surface. So if you see that, recall that we have the Wessel-Minowitan turn here. So there's a 1 over PF, small parameter suppression, which means that the Fermi surface curvature here. And another two parts, for example, I want to emphasize, is this derivative of zeta of n here, which n is the unit vector along the radial direction. So this will show you something like the extrinsic curvature. And another part, which is very crucial in our formalism, is this guy. I hope you can see. It's derivative of theta of phi. So which means that the nearby boson will talk to each other in our formalism. And another crucial difference of our formalism and the previous attempt is that we need to think about this theta as some continuous variable. So it's not like the patch theory that you have some discrete variable. Another part which contributes to the nonlinearities comes from the dispersion nonlinearity. So you can see here, the Hamiltonian has this derivative with respect to P here.
If I just know the linear bosonization, and I want to do better, I can also keep adding this higher dimensional terms. So what is the advantage here? Is that, you know, I would probably on general ground expect this term to be there. So what do you buy from the coadjoint orbit?
Ah, that's a good question. So I think one major benefit I want to show is that our formalism, for example, can compute these nonlinear responses And this will itself give us a very crucial benefit to understand, to compute the diagrams.
Then,
for example,
question in a different way. So suppose I start, I look at the first term in the west and the weekend term.
Yes.
And I want to add how the terms.
Yes.
What fixes the coefficients?
Okay, so I think there we have some derivative here, and also we have this Fermi surface curvature as some small parameter suppression as well. So this has come out from our formalism. And this one also a very crucial part is the derivative theta of phi as well.
But generically, I would expect the coefficients between different terms can be independent. But here, they have a rigid structure.
Yes, there's some universal structure like what you say. Yes.
Is this coming from the requirement that the Weismann-Witten term should be independent of F0?
I think so. Yes.
And is this the reason why the cancellation happens?
The cancellation happens on, you mean what cancellation that you say?
The simplification in calculating the density-density correlation function.
Ah, so that's, I don't think so. But that's a little bit tedious. I think you can also simply see that from the scaling as well. For example, if you study from some Gaussian theory, and from the scaling of the endpoint correlator, where n is larger than 2, then you can see directly from the scaling that the cancellation will happen as well. So there's some benefit that can give you to this flavor of the question. Yes?
Yeah, and as a follow-up, so what fixes the coefficients in the SH then? So in SH, we also get like not arbitrary coefficients.
No, there's not. Only in the Weismann-Witten part.
And say when, like 1 over 3, factorial and not some...
Oh, you're asking about how does this factorial comes from. Okay, so this comes from like the factorial, that construction of here.
But I don't get any new free parameters, say some number, some coupling C, some arbitrary coupling, no?
Well, if epsilon prime is the free parameter, right?
Exactly, that's the free parameter, yes. So that's why I say that in the Weismann-Witten term, that's universal, not it's fixed. But it's not in the case, it's not the case in Hamiltonian part. Yes.
Just to make sure.
Yes.
Weismann-Witten term is just derived from what you wrote on the board there.
Exactly. So this is what it should look like. Yes. Okay. Let's continue. So like one benefit of having our formalism is that, for example, you can compute the nonlinear responses like the density three-point function. So in the fermionic side, you need the one-loop diagram to compute these nonlinear responses. But it turns out that in our formalism, we only need a tree-level diagram to compute the formalism. And we actually check it very carefully. I have to admit, it's not very trivial. So the two of the result will be matched to each other. So it turns out that gives us a lot of benefit of trying to compute the diagrams. And also, you will reproduce the density three-point function from the kinetic theory. Okay, so our formalism is some multidimensional case. So in 1 plus 1D, we can check the Luttinger liquid action. There's some Luttinger liquid action which will chiral bosons. That's, I don't know how much time I still have, but let's continue. So we can also think about, up to now, we are only talking about the Fermi liquid theory. But how if we go beyond the Fermi liquid theory? So we can, one simplest case that we can think about is that we couple to some critical bosons, for example, some minimal coupling turns. So if you try to compute the critical dynamical exponent z equal to 3 at tree levels, like the critical boson propagators here, and also you can compute the specific heat as well. So now if I want to ask, how if we go beyond the tree level and some correction to the critical dynamical exponent? So for example, I want to compute this kind of diagrams. And what will our formalism will give you some benefit of thinking about this kind of problem. So it turns out that we can think about this effective vertices of loop configuration loop diagram. Like, remember that we say the loop diagram can be only thinking about as some tree level diagrams. So our formalism can give you some benefit of computing here as some effective vertices, as some only tree level computation. So this will save our efforts a lot for this kind of computation. Because of the limit of time, let me continue. So I'm going to tell you what's the ongoing work we will have here.
Sorry.
It's
still,
yeah, yeah.
Still for how many things? It's a very effective action. So you have only terms that are local in angular space.
Oh, sorry, I probably didn't hear you.
Terms that are local in data space.
Exactly.
So does that say exclude lambda parameters or BCS term?
Yeah, so I think we haven't show you here, but in our paper we did work it out. Yes.
So how does the BCS term look?
Ah, that's a very good question. So we believe that we need to have the extended algebra for the BCS to include the BCS terms. And we haven't worked out the effective field theory action of that. But we are working in progress. Yes,
then,
thank you.
And then lambda function is just bilocal in anger?
Yes, yes.
So lambda function is what?
Bilocal in covers two different angles.
But it's not written here.
Not here.
Uh-huh. Does that also include the non-forward scattering as well?
I think that's an interesting question to investigate. We haven't done it carefully yet. Yeah, thank you. I don't know how much time I still have. Okay, let me wrap it up very quickly. So let me show you something that we have in progress. That is, if we want to couple our formalism to some background gauge fields, and how can one do so? So we need to have some gauging procedure of coupling the background gauge field of phase space gauge field. And so the gauge transformation, it be treated as some subgroup of the canonical transformation. And we know that the phase space, you have some canonical relation of S and P. So which means that the phase space can thinking about as some non-commutative space. So the gauge field can be thinking about as the non-commutative gauge fields. So the gauge transformation, it turns out to be non-abelian. So there's some open question I'm thinking about right now. And I have some answer to this question. So let's talk more. Is to turn on the electromagnetic field in the presence of the Berry connections. So it turns out that we can also refer to the what Alves and friends are doing about this LU1 anomaly. So if you try to find out from our formalism that we have some non-abelian gauge transformation, and we can work out the covariant wall identity. So if you do some linear approximation of this covariant wall identity that we are thinking about, we can be related to what LU1 anomaly in the previous work. Okay, so this is also something I want to draw to your attention is to some ongoing work of the include the Berry curvature. So how can one do so? So up to now, we have the Poisson bracket, it's the phase space Poisson bracket. So to include the Berry curvature, you have to have the coordinate, which is non-commute, and be related to the Berry curvature. And you can also thinking about work out the equation of motion and be connected to some anomalous Hall effect. For example, you can compute the nonlinear current responses and using the Kubo formula and try to understand the whole conductivity. So this is something we are actively working on now. Okay, let me give my conclusion. So we are thinking about some systemic formalism of the nonlinear effective field theory action of Fermi liquid theory. And the method that we use is the conjoint orbit method. And we can have the nonlinear bosonization and arbitrary dimension, and which will reproduce the linear and nonlinear responses. And it turns out that if we want to work out the covariant wall identity and do the linearized approximation, and you will go back to what previous work of this loop group, LU1 anomaly. So here are some wish lists I'm thinking about now, and also the list can be more, so let's chat. So first is that the work out the non-Fermi liquid theory related to our work. For example, if you couple to some critical bosons or gauge fields. Another question I think I'm also very interesting is that up to now, we are only thinking about this semi-classical approximation. But what about if we want to have the more broader picture? For example, you can have this higher derivative of the Poisson bracket, which is this characterized by this Moya bracket. So there's a non-analytic correction to the Moya bracket in this formalism that we can think about. Maybe it can give you some 2KF physics, for example. And also there's non-Fermi liquid plus disorder, and there are a lot more. So let's chat more about that. So thank you very much. I'll take any question.
Can I go back to the Berry curvature part? So here I see Berry curvature entering. Does the Berry connection, or more precisely, the Berry phase around the Fermi surface enter anywhere in the dynamic theory?
So we need to, this is some work in progress, actually. So this will be the Berry connection of momentum space.
Right.
Yes. So, so we haven't worked it out concrete result to share here. But yeah, we have an action and an equation of motion, but we still need to understand it better. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Supposing I consider some simple transformations of the shape of the Fermi surface, like I start from a circle, a sphere, and then I squeeze it in one direction and it stretches out in the other direction. Is there an interpretation for that in terms of phi?
Okay, so if you have I think it will be characterized by the cojoint orbit method. If you have the phase space volume to be fixed because the particle number should be fixed, I think this can be captured by the cojoint orbit because all the shape of this.
For this kind of specific changes in shape, do you know like geometric? What phi should look like?
Huh. So my answer to this shortly is yes, I believe one can capture from the cojoint orbit method. And the second more precise answer to this is we haven't done yet. Yeah, so thank you. Hi.
It's a very easy question. I think I don't understand very well the physical meaning of the coadjoint method. Like, I understand that canonical transformations preserve the volume in phase space, and that's related with like number particle conservation. But apart from that, like, what is the physical meaning of like choosing canonical transformations here?
Okay, so I think simply understand is that if you think about simple particle in phase space, so the time evolution of this simple particle can be governed by the Hamiltonian evolution. So now it's more like we are thinking about the swarm of this particle in phase space. Yes, so this is how one can think about it here. Yes.
So normally once you have an action, you say that if you want to go to finite temperature, you just have to make the time direction compact. Does that work with this action? Does that make sense at all?
Oh, you mean to go to the finite temperature generalization? That's a very good question. Actually, that's something I'm thinking about now. One thing I think one can one need to have is that you don't have the sharp Fermi surface anymore. This is first thing. And the second thing is that I'm thinking about like coupling to some, for example, Luttinger potential in our formalism. as well.
But what I was wondering was, if you just take the action that you have, put it, and you put it in time with your complex does that already give you the right theory or not? Because if it was the real quantum action, you would expect that should give you the right answer, right?
Yes, I believe one can think about it like that way, yes. And I think it's also a very interesting question to study, but we haven't done yet. Thank you.
So about this extended algebra you're talking about to get the fermion and so on, is that similar to adding Klein factors in multi-component Luttinger?
Yeah. So I think that's a very good direction to look at, yes. But you have to encode the single fermion operator. Is that the one that you're thinking about? Yes, but I have to admit that we haven't done so, yes. I believe that's the one direction to think about, yes.
All right, if there are no questions, thank you again.
Thank you.